Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
This is The Advertising Show, indeed. Ray Schillens, Brad Forsyth. Happy to have you here. The Advertising Show being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production presenting global figures in the advertising and marketing industry. Today we've got the entertainment industry represented. Alex Ben Block, the senior editor at The Hollywood Reporter, will be joining us. Alex has been and done most everything here. I see he even created the first 3D day for the American Pavilion during the 2008 Cannes Film Festival. He moderated and participated in panels at numerous events, including Digital Hollywood, NAPTI, Show West, and the Hong Kong International Film Market. He is an author. His books include The Legend of Bruce Lee, Outfoxed. Maybe you've read him. Maybe you've lived in the city where he's lived, because he's lived most everywhere. And now he resides in Los Angeles. And we're happy to have Alex. He's a frequent guest here at The Ad Show. And a little bit later on, sooner than later, Jeremy Kent is with us. And Jeremy is talking about Sir Martin Sorrell this time around, and the economy and the way things are in Europe. And we're happy to have Jeremy, obviously, as a contributor to The Advertising Show. I have a thing here, Brad, that says, sponsors stand behind Armstrong. That would be Lance Armstrong, and the sponsors would be Radio Shack, Anheuser-Busch, InBev, and Nissan, sticking by seven-time Tour de France winner Lance Armstrong, despite the emergence of new allegations against the cycling pro. The former winner, Floyd Landis, who was stripped of his 2006 Tour win for doping, provided the Wall Street Journal more details. This is what's written in their article. Suzanne Rancia. Didn't we have her on the show one time?
Yes.
We did, didn't we? Yeah, that's what I thought.
I think so, yeah.
More details about his use of performance-enhancing drugs and made more claims of doping by Mr. Armstrong in a statement. Mr. Armstrong broadly dismissed the allegations and questioned Mr. Landis' credibility. He did not address specific allegations. You know, this guy is a really great 38-year-old Texan who is a good representative, I sure hope that with the denials and everything, or the lack of answers, I guess, it doesn't come back to bite him. I hope that he's squeaky clean and things are good, because he is just basically a real, really cool dude and great representative of the United States.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, when it comes to, you know, any kind of anti-drug message, what better group than a bunch of bikers that are bent over a bike to just say no to crack? I mean, that would be a great visual to use in a public service announcement.
Exactly. That's even better than Got Milk. Right. Okay, good. I like that. No, but I hope Lance is a good guy.
Well, you know, this whole thing, Ray, came from the other guy. His name escapes me because I'm not a big fan of cycling, although I'm sure people out there that are know exactly who I'm talking about. This other guy that was accused of taking drugs, he denied it for years, and then he finally, you know, came about recently and said, okay, I did it, but so did Lance Armstrong. That's where this whole thing's coming from. It's just crazy.
Yeah, well, stop that, Floyd. Go ride your bike.
Yeah, Floyd.
Call us in the morning. Yeah. What do you have there?
Yeah, and by the way, Floyd was a guy on Andy Griffith, too.
Oh, yeah, the barber.
Yeah, that's right. It seems as though there are a lot of folks out there, Ray, that want to be the next social media face of MTV. Maybe we can ask Amber Mack about this next week. Last month, MTV launched a program in conjunction with American Express called Follow Me, the Search for the First MTV TJ, that's as in Twitter jockey.
I see.
The idea was to tap into the social media music junkie universe to find a person who will speak on behalf of MTV to the Facebook, Twitter, texting crowd. Since launching Follow Me, MTV has received 16,000 individual TJ nominations. Apparently, the idea here, Ray, is that the TJ search is set to culminate in August of this year, mm-hmm. when the winner is announced just a few weeks prior to his or her first assignment, which will be the spreading of the word digitally during the 2010 MTV Video Music Awards in Los Angeles. Apparently, officials at MTV say that the audience response has been exceedingly big.
Oh, really? Yeah. Good. Maybe Larry King would like to do that. What do you think?
Well, I got to tell you, Larry needs to check the mirror or something, or look at a new video and look at himself and then look at his wife and rethink whether he wants to divorce her. What's wrong with that guy?
Something like that. Yeah, exactly. Movie piracy websites, they're out there. Their alleged names are, let's see, what are they? Oh, gosh, I had that here just a moment
ago. Free Movies Are Us.
Yeah, they mentioned a couple here.
Well, we don't want to say who they are because then we're sending traffic to the pirates.
True. There was an Al Qaeda story that I didn't want to do either, just because it would call targeted domain name TVShackNet, links.tv, now-movies.com. All of those basically are being shut down because literally they are losing, just a couple of bucks here and there by having these pirated sites. And really, that's something serious. You don't do stuff like that.
Right.
So, consequently, go get them and go shut them down. Motion piracy costs the U.S. economy more than $20 billion annually. What a shame. So, yeah. At least they're getting shut down. I like that. It's very good. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say the TV cable network they tried to launch here many years ago in the U.S. Now they've come back and relaunched it, and apparently it's got some cable carriers here in the U.S. that carry Algeraz. What is the word I'm looking for?
I don't know. I honestly don't know the word. I wish I could help you there. I would.
But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
Al Jazeera, so, or something like that.
Al Jazeera. That's right. Al Jazeera. Thank you. Yeah. As you can tell, I'm a regular viewer. Anyway, yeah, it's one of those things that, as you were just talking about, there's enough stuff going on out there without trying to be in that gray area and doing things illegally. And, they're struggling enough in the music industry and the movie industry without having piracy going on out there. So,
oh, absolutely.
I'm with you.
I totally agree. Alex Ben Block, you're going to join us momentarily on the Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. It's being powered by Shipple.com. Ed Shipple and his gang do a great job for us. It's Schipul.com. Check it out. It's a marketing platform called Tenancy. Jeremy Kent is here all the way from over there, way over there, with another up-to-date report, our European correspondent, Jeremy Kent, right here on the Advertising Show. Let's listen.
Hello and welcome to the European News Desk. I'm Jeremy Kent. Coming up, no growth in Western Europe, says Sir Martin Sorrell. England's defeat creates brand opportunities, and a Red Bull snorts in Parliament Square. In a recent interview with BBC Television's Newsnight, WPP Chief Executive Sir Martin Sorrell stated that clients in Western Europe would be focused on cost containment for long periods of time and that they don't see growth potential in the region. Earlier in the day, Sir Martin had attended WPP Group's annual general meeting where the company reported a 1.8% rise in revenue for the first 5 months of 2010. WPP, which owns JWT, Ogilvy & Mather and Y&R, claimed year-on-year growth of well over 5% worldwide and that UK growth had improved since January. In South Africa, as the Soccer World Cup reaches a climax, it's worth noting that many English fans see Germany as the arch-rival on the soccer field, and the chant of two world wars and a World Cup can often be heard around the stadium. But on that awful Sunday afternoon a couple of weeks ago, England crashed out of the World Cup, losing 4-1 to Germany, England's worst World Cup defeat ever. By the following morning, spoof press ads appeared for the Kia car company with the tagline, "Oh well, at least our warranty beats the Germans." Nissan wasn't far behind with a TBWA-produced ad for its GTR brand claiming one match the Germans didn't win. The most controversial incident in the match itself occurred when England's Frank Lampard scored a goal only to have it incorrectly disallowed by the Uruguayan linesman. In a wonderful piece of opportunistic marketing, Asda, a major British retailer, offered anyone with a Uruguayan passport a free eye test. The offer was tweeted immediately after the disallowed goal, then repeated on the retailer's blog and later extended as a direct and very public offer to the linesman himself. Staying with sport, as we go to air, the Northamptonshire village of Silverstone will be a much quieter place as the British Grand Prix weekend and the roar of Formula One engines recede for another year. A week or so earlier, Parliament Square was rudely awoken at 6 a.m. to the sound of Mark Webber's Red Bull Formula One car pulling up outside the Houses of Parliament for a practice pit stop. Red Bull claimed that the press stunt aimed to show that the Australian driver had made a full recovery following a crash the previous weekend. But actually, it provided sponsors with a great photo opportunity as the world's motorsport press turned its attention on Great Britain. From London, this is Jeremy Kent for The Advertising Show.
Thanks, Jeremy Kent, here with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show. And a very frequent and welcome guest here, and a contributor to The Advertising Show now for several years, award-winning entertainment industry journalist, author, commentator, and talk show host Alex Ben Block, who also happens to be senior editor of The Hollywood Reporter and lead editor on the book George Lucas's Blockbusting, published to great acclaim in January of this year. Alex is also a show business historian for Hollywood Today and a regular contributor, of course, as I said before, to The Advertising Show. So, Alex, with all that said, good to have you here.
Ray and Brad, it's always great to be with you.
Thank you.
Well, and we are honored, as always, to have you. Let's talk a little bit about summer movies, Alex. How are box office receipts going so far?
Well, you know, it's been kind of a so-so year. It's technically, actually, the revenue, the box office from a dollar point of view, is slightly above last year. But I'll tell you why in a second, because the reality is that attendance is actually well below last year, and the season has started slowly. The reason it's a little bit higher is all these 3D movies. People pay a premium price to see 3D, and that inflates the box office revenue figures. And, of course, one of the big hits of the season, where 3D really has mattered, is Toy Story 3, which only in a couple of weeks has already taken in over $289 million.
Wow.
And is just going gangbusters. And I think on Rotten Tomatoes, you know, where they measure how well you've done critically, it's close to 100% critics loving this movie. So it's not just kids, it's families as well. And Pixar Animation, this is their 11th movie in a row that is a big success at the box office and pretty much a critical hit. And so they continue roaring along, and that's one of the big hits. But those 3D dollars, you know, when you pay those couple extra bucks at the box office, it makes a big, big difference. Should we talk about some of the other movies that are hits and misses?
Well, it's still early in the summer, but yeah, give us a rundown.
Well, let's talk about some misses first. Although it's hard to call Robin Hood a complete miss because it did do $104 million, it is something of a disappointment. You can say the same about Sex and the City 2 with $94 million in, but based on expectations, not so good. Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, same thing, $88 million in, but you would expect to have three times that much by now. Now, there's no question that Night and Day with Tom Cruise has definitely been a disappointment, about $50 million after 2 weeks, but for that movie, which cost over $100 million to make, a disappointment. And one of several disappointments at Fox, 20th Century Fox, A-Team, $70 million in, but again, well below expectations. And Get Him to the Greek, which is also not doing as well as hoped, $57 million, and Marmaduke, about $30 million. And all four of those were Fox movies, and after several big summers, they're having a little bit of a rough time. But then there's the hits. Iron Man 2, very nice, $308 million in. Shrek Forever from DreamWorks Animation has done about $232 million, which certainly is fine, but not as big as the last Shrek, kind of topping out a little bit lower than the previous installments. Grown Ups, one of those raunchy teen comedies, done about $84 million, which is quite successful. Maybe the biggest hit of the summer is the Twilight Saga Eclipse, $260 million in about 5 days. And that's actually slightly less than Twilight Saga New Moon did, but boy, it's still the biggest thing going right now. One success story that's kind of a surprise is The Last Airbender. despite almost completely negative reviews. It's done $53 million in its first 5 days, about $70 million over the 4th of July weekend. It did cost $150 million, but considering the horrible reviews and the word on it, it's doing pretty well. Karate Kid, another surprise hit, about $154 million after only 3 weeks. So there's good news and bad news in Hollywood.
How much, you mentioned $100 million to produce the Cruise movie. How much did it cost to produce Eclipse? Do you happen to know?
Eclipse actually was $70 million, a bargain.
Especially when you look at how much it's making.
Because you got talent there who's, you know, good, but not that above the title, big gross participant good. And they actually are able to make these several movies at a time. There's two more coming. And Summit Entertainment, who owns this franchise, has really done a good job controlling the costs. So on a return on investment basis, it's among the most profitable movies of the year.
But just before we wrap up movies, what would be an average cost to produce a decent movie with a star or two in it today?
Well, a studio movie is right around $100 million, and then another $60, $70 million or more to market it. So yeah. It's a pretty expensive proposition. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't movies being made for a lot less than that, some way less than that. But when you get into the studio movies with the unions and you start hiring movie stars, which is a declining species in some ways, it gets pretty expensive. But really what is going on in the movie business is that stars are ever less important. What's important are the concepts, Twilight Saga coming from a best-selling book, Toy Story being its own kind of franchise, and even though it's got stars, it's not really star-driven. Iron Man being a Marvel comic book property, Karate Kid being a remake property. So, you know, all of those, really, those franchises, whether it's based on a video game or a big book or a previous movie, the one exception this summer, it looks like, there's a movie coming that looks like it's going to be the hit of the summer. It's called Inception, and it's directed by Chris Nolan, who you probably know did the last couple of Batman movies, a really good director, getting amazing reviews, amazing buzz. And that's the one original movie this summer that looks like it could really break out, unless, of course, you count Salt, an action movie with Angelina Jolie, but we're going to have to wait and see how that does.
And, of course, there's always independent movies where a star is willing to take less because of a well-written script or something that they just want to do. But staying with 3D for a moment, Alex, has 3D become the global phenomenon that everyone expected?
It really is amazing. You know, we are in the midst of the digital conversion. Within 2 or 3 years, it's going to be hard to find any movie theater in the United States or around the world that still runs celluloid through a movie projector. And the reason for this big conversion is not that they love digital so much, but digital lays the groundwork for 3D. You need to be digital first, and then you do a 3D add-on. And 3D has really become a phenomenon that's been driving the market. I recently did an article where I talked to exhibitors all over the world before the Cine Expo show in Amsterdam about a week ago, and what I heard was that the conversion is underway big time, that everybody had converted one or two of the auditoriums in their multiplex to get 3D, but now they're doing the entire multiplex, and literally across Western Europe, Asia, not so much in Latin America, it's taking a little longer there. But we're seeing this conversion to digital, and all of them, in some cases, for instance, the number two chain in Great Britain is converting to digital, and 50% of the screens, and they have typically like 14 screens to a complex, half of them are going to be 3D capable. So that if they have several 3D movies, like this Christmas, there's going to be 7 major 3D movies out all at once around Christmas time.
Wow.
And so, you know, you got to have the screens to put them on, and that's really kind of a problem. It's a big squeeze. What's been happening up to now is, whether IMAX or 3D, a 3D movie comes out, Avatar, a great example, it dominated the screens from Christmas into March, but come March, they had to get out of the way to make room for Alice in Wonderland. And so even they kind of left some money on the table because it could have continued running.
Alex, will you go to the theaters then with your own personal pair of 3D glasses, or how does that work?
Well, actually, they're starting to do that in Europe now. They have a deal where you buy the glasses and bring them back, and they give you a dollar or two off the ticket each time you bring the glasses back.
Okay.
Plus, don't forget, 3D television sets are now widely available. They're still very expensive.
Yeah.
They're still a little bit exotic, but the whole 3D TV thing is happening, and they're really very high quality. And within a couple of years, we could see a lot of 3D TVs in the home, and everybody's going to be buying their own glasses. In some cases, not the kind of passive glasses you're used to, but actually what they call shutter glasses, active glasses, that actually enhance the 3D experience by being a mechanized form of glasses.
3D and everything else you need to know about the entertainment industry. We have another couple of segments with Alex Ben Block, who is a senior editor at The Hollywood Reporter. TheHollywoodReporter.com is the website that you can find out more about Alex and his most recent endeavors. We'll come back with more conversation in just a minute.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
Ipana presents Bucky Fever Space Guard.
Welcome back. Good conversation going here on today's show with Alex Ben Block and Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth here at The Advertising Show. Alex is senior editor at The Hollywood Reporter and a frequent and welcome guest and contributor to the show. Alex, welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah, before we talk about the upfronts and how they did this year, which I think could be a good indicator of how we're doing economically or how we are expected to do economically on into the year, let's get your take, Alex, on the new fall TV lineup for the networks. How's it going to look this year?
Well, actually, I think it's kind of interesting. You know, I did a piece recently on the new Tom Selleck show that's going to be on CBS. It's a character-driven police drama that's going to be on Friday nights. And what the networks are trying to do is retake the schedule. They've lost a lot of their audience to cable, and now they're trying to put up shows that will be so seductive that people will want to watch them again. And, you know, NBC last year, of course, and the great Jay Leno experiment got rid of all their 10 o'clock dramas. This year they'll be back with a full lineup of 10 o'clock dramas. All the networks are trying to be more competitive. A lot of reality shows, but kind of bigger concept, but a lot of scripted shows and comedies coming back. It's really going to be a fall where the broadcast networks are going to try to be much more competitive. You know, CBS is pretty much dominated along with Fox, either in demographics or in number of viewers. The American Idol juggernaut may or may not continue now for the first time next year, and they'll be back next January. Simon Cowell will no longer be a judge. He's actually coming back with his own show on Fox called, I think, The X Factor. And so we're waiting to see who the new judge is. And that's been a powerhouse show. Some of the other shows we know well are gone. But, you know, I think actually the network's looking fairly smart this year, but it's a tough business. Their market share continues to drop. And as we talk about the upfronts in a minute, what you'll hear is it's finally starting to have an impact on how much money they get, because they just don't have the viewership they used to have. People are watching other stuff. They're watching cable. They're watching satellite channels. They're playing video games. God knows what they're doing, but they're just not watching the big four networks the way they used to.
And it's all about eyeballs in the networks, or any TV viewership for that matter. And just for those that may not know, upfronts, network upfronts, are all about media agencies and advertisers purchasing in advance spots for fall programming, much of which they do not know how they're going to do in the ratings, and oftentimes get guaranteed particular performance levels for audience ratings, and therefore there's a lot of guesswork. Thoughts on upfronts this year? How did it go, Alex?
Well, it was a pretty strong year. We rebounded from last year, which was not a good year. The total upfronts for the broadcast networks is going to run somewhere between $8.1 and $8.7 billion. Now, that sounds like a lot of money, but you have to remember back in 2008, they did $9.2 billion. In 2007, they did $9.1 billion. It did drop quite sharply last year, and it's rebounded this year. And also, NBC, for instance, has made a bit of a comeback. You know, if you count their cable networks as well as their broadcast network, they took in about $4 billion. About $1.6 billion of that was for the broadcast network. So that's a nice increase over last year. The ABC did about $2.2 billion this year for its prime time, about $2.4 billion when you add in daytime and other day parts. CBS had another strong year, did between $2.4 billion and $2.6 billion. They continue to have a very strong lineup. Fox, between $1.8 and $1.9 billion. And the little CW network is going to do somewhere around $370 million to $404 million, which is pretty solid for them. So for a business that a lot of doomsayers want to believe is on their way out, they did quite nicely, and there was a lot less nervousness. You remember, it's only a year or two now that the ratings changed. They used to rate the programs. Now they rate the commercials. And so, and plus the DVR factor has only been around 2 years, where you not only measure what people watch when they watch it, but you also measure DVR usage for up to 2 days afterwards gets thrown into the ratings as well. So it's taken a while for all that to shake out. But the reality is that the broadcasting cable networks, particularly the Time Warner networks, which includes the Turner broadcasting networks like TNT, as well as the NBC networks like Bravo, are really continuing to grow very nicely. Their business is up strongly over last year. So the pie is being divided up into ever more pieces. And then there's that thing called the Internet, and they're certainly draining off a few bucks as well. So, ad agencies, the days when you just put up a 30-second commercial and that's all you needed, those are over. Today, you got to think smart. You got to put up the 30s, but you also got to be on the cable. You got to be on the Internet. You got to do guerrilla marketing. You got to do event marketing. It's a combination of all those to reach people, because people either don't watch commercials or their eyes glaze over, so you got to find some way to sneak them in. Interestingly, though, product placement has not worked out very well. Everybody was so worried a couple of years ago, oh, product placement, they're going to sneak all these commercials into programs. Reality shows it's kind of happened. But when it comes to scripted shows, it turns out it's not that easy to do. The people who make the shows don't like it. It can interrupt the flow of the show. And that's turned out to be much tougher to do than they expected. So good old-fashioned advertising is back in fashion.
So beyond product placement, you're suggesting that the producers of the show aren't as accepting of this, but obviously are viewers accepting of this kind of stuff too as well?
Well, I think viewers turn off to it. It's not like people say, oh, I see a product placement, I will now change the station. Yeah. What they go is, this is crap, click, and they're on to another station. People sense it. They know when they're being hyped. They know when this crap is being shoved down their throat. And they just don't put up with it. There's no need to. They sit there with a remote, and they just click, and they're gone.
Yeah.
And so, the people who create these shows, the writers, the producers, often they hate this stuff, and they did it because they had a gun to their head, because the network was saying to them, well, look, they're giving us all this money. We got to have this money. We need the money. So they made compromises. But once it became clear that it wasn't helping the show, and in some cases it hurt the show, we've seen a lot less of it.
We're going to continue our conversation here in just a minute with Alex Ben Block, senior editor at The Hollywood Reporter. Alex Ben Block is our special guest, along with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe on The Advertising Show. Glad you're listening. Back in The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe, talking about upfronts reminds me of a trip to Vegas. With your client's money, something like that. But anyway, it's good to have you here, Alex, on The Advertising Show. As always, entertaining and informative. Thanks for being here.
Pleasure.
Last year the Oscars enlarged categories, had more, more movies that and more individuals that were performing in particular categories to try to, gain greater interest among larger groups of people, et cetera. I understand, Alex, that there are still more changes afoot at the Oscars.
Well, the Academy has decided to once again have 10 Best Picture nominees this year. That's set. They are making some changes. The show had a nice little uptick in ratings last year, not as much as they'd like, but they continue to work on it. They've selected the producers much earlier than usual. They talked, and this is the most radical thing, is they talked about changing the date of the show. For many, many years it used to be in March. More recently it's been somewhere in the end of February. Now they're considering moving it into January, which raises some logistical issues, but what it's really about is the Academy just can't stand that there's all these other shows in front of them, the Golden Globes, the SAG Awards, the People's Choice Awards, you name it, and a bunch of others. And they feel that it's taking away from them. They don't want to be the caboose, the last show in the line anymore. They want to be back in a power position, and they think being earlier will do that for them. I don't happen to agree, but there's a lot of sentiment for that. And they considered seriously moving the show, but they realized logistically they just can't do it for 2011. So it is going to stay in the end of February. But for 2012, they're seriously considering moving the Oscars into January. And this is going to make it harder.
Let me ask you something, Alex. What does that do to the December viewership? All of the people that watch movies during December.
Well, that's the trick. You still got to get all those movies to come out in December, but they'd have a lot less time to reach the voters, to send out DVDs, to promote them. It would be a killer for the trade papers to carry the advertising, but I think that makes them happy at the Academy. Logistically, it just, to me, it jams it all into too short a period. And I actually like the cycle the way it is. I like that there's a bunch of other shows that lead up to the big show, and it kind of sets up the competition. And, well, this guy won SAG, and that guy won the Broadcast Award, and this one won some other award. And now let's see what the Oscars are going to do. But the Academy thinks somehow that this is not a good thing, and so they're looking at it. But personally, I'd rather see it stay in March.
Well, and not to be left out, the Emmys has a bit of controversy happening right now, I understand.
Well, the Emmys are going through their own set of changes. You know, they're in the last year of an eight-year contract, what they call the wheel, in which the show moves from among four networks. Each one has it two times. This is NBC's year. But in the course of this wheel, NBC picked up football. And so as a result, they've moved the Emmys from its typical third week in September date back to the last week of August, which is just before Labor Day. A lot of people are away. People aren't really awake and ready for the new season yet. But that's when the Emmys are going to take place. But what's really going on is that the contract is up, and negotiations have started to renew the wheel, the contract with the broadcast networks. And the broadcasters have a exclusive two-month window leading up to the show to try and make a deal. And after that, if there is no deal, then cable networks, maybe the Internet, maybe satellite, maybe pay TV and others could come in and possibly try to get it. But there's a lot of complications, because if you take the Emmys away from the broadcast networks, they probably aren't going to participate. They won't enter the competition. They won't provide their stars. They'll program against the show. So it's probably in their interest to keep the broadcasters. But the broadcasters say, look, number one, the ratings aren't that great. Number two, most of the Emmys now goes to promote stuff we don't do, like pay TV channels get the biggest benefit out of it. One guy pointed out to me 30 Rock has won the award several years in a row. It didn't seem to help their ratings very much. The New Adventures of Old Christine won an Emmy, and the show got canceled because the numbers weren't very good. So there's a lot of back and forth. The broadcasters are open to carrying the show, but they don't want to pay more. The Academy, of course, wants more money. It's almost 90% plus of their budget is based on the license fee they get. So right now there's a big tug-of-war going on. And if there is a deal, it'll probably come in August, just before the show. But right now, it's anybody's guess what's going to happen.
Well, before I ask my next question, I've got to set it up like this. Hello, Syracuse. You're on the air. What's your question? So behind Larry King's recent announcement to retire, I think we all knew that he was going to be retiring soon, but kind of surprised, I think, a lot of people, including those upstairs at CNN.
Well, you know, Larry's ratings have been a little soft lately, and so there was a lot of talk. And, of course, they've been denying that he was going to retire. But he is of a certain age, and he had reached a point, and he's in his personal life going through a lot of changes. He either is or isn't getting divorced, depending on what day and hour it is. He has a couple of small children he likes to spend more time with. I actually ran into him at the Dodger game recently. He was there with his son. And he says he wants to be able to go to the kids' Little League games, which were the show actually got in the way of that. He's got a lot of money, so that's not the issue. But the issue is CNN. Let's talk about what's really gone on in cable news. In the past, people went out to news for fair and unbiased coverage. They don't seem to do that anymore. Now they go to the network that tells them what they want to hear, mostly Fox. I don't happen to agree with Fox, but a lot of people do, and their ratings dominate in cable news. But CNBC and MSNBC also try to play to a specific audience. CNN claims to be the one who's trying to be truly fair and balanced, but sometimes it can be truly boring. It's actually more interesting when you have a point of view.
Right.
And so there's a lot of debate about, they say they want to have a Q&A show. They want to still bring on the celebrities and the newsmakers. You know, it's not clear who's going to take his place. But whoever it is, they say at 8 o'clock or whatever time he's on, you know, there will be a similar type show. They recently hired Elliot Spitzer, the disgraced former governor of New York, who'd been a prosecutor, and he's now going to be a talk show host on CNN.
Right.
He's not going to really replace Larry King, but You know, Joy Behar has a show on a sister network called what we used to call Headline News, and she's doing very well. She might be brought over to replace Larry King. Larry King wants Ryan Seacrest, which I think is one of the worst ideas I ever heard, but he likes Ryan and thinks he should do it. He says if he's interested in politics, which what I can tell he's interested only in money and how he looks in the mirror, but that's me.
What about Anderson Cooper? What's going on there?
Well, Anderson's ratings are a little soft, too. There's a lot of rumors he might bolt altogether. He might just walk away from CNN and go do other things. Might go to CBS. You know, he's a contributing editor on 60 Minutes. He has put out a statement saying forcefully, I am staying at CNN. I'm keeping my show. I love what I do. He actually is traveling all over the world. He's been to Haiti several times, to Iraq, Afghanistan, and trying to liven up his show. And he does have an audience, but, you know, he's had his struggles in the ratings as well. So he's not really going to be the direct replacement for Larry King. And they got till this fall to make a decision. But it's really crucial. CNN makes a lot of money because it's worldwide, and they do have a big reach in their viewership. But domestically, where you kind of make your reputation, they're struggling a little bit, and they're getting their brains beat out in the ratings by Fox, and it's very frustrating for them. So making money isn't enough. You also want to make people think you're really important. And so that's what this replacement is all about. Who's going to keep them feeling like they're really important?
Well, we will do that for you, Alex. We do that every time we have you on. The parking space and everything, it goes that way, the private jet. But we are out of time, unfortunately, Brad. It goes quickly. Alex is usually worth two shows a visit, and unfortunately, we have only one this time around. But we will always call you back here, Alex. Thank you so much for your insight and the update on what's going on in Hollywood.
Always a pleasure. Keep doing the great job you're doing.
On the Advertising Show, Ray and Brad back with more in just a moment. Alex Ben Block, always a blast on the Advertising Show, thehollywoodreporter.com. And actually, Alex used to work in the city that Larry King worked at in Miami years ago. Larry King's been an interesting guy. You had something that you wanted to add to that, Brad, as well.
Yeah, and I don't know that Alex could have commented on it because it's really just my view, and that is if you look at what's gone on lately with the problems with BP in the Gulf and you know, issues with our economy, but more importantly, late-breaking news that's been a lot of in the news of different topics in the past 6, 7, 8 months, it's had little to no effect on CNN's ratings. Yet, you know, go back to the events of 9/11, go back to the space shuttle, go back to other major news events, you always saw a spike in CNN's cover ratings.
Yes.
Because that's where everybody went. Nowadays, they just go back to Fox or wherever they happen to enjoy the commentary to find out what's late-breaking, and CNN just isn't the place that people go to nowadays.
No, it seems to have changed, and there's been a lot of change over the years with the relationship to the host that they've had on their shows, and it's like, okay, I thought I was used to watch this guy, and now he's gone. What were you watching when you tuned into 9/11. Do you remember the network?
I was on my way to work, so I was hearing that on a radio news program. You know.
Okay, so we were here at the office in the middle of a session, and watched it on the computer. You know, because they were streaming back then as well. But it was interesting. But we were on CNN. I think it was weird. It was just
I would have tuned in CNN. I think most people would have. I remember when I was in my car on my way to work, a client called me and said, "Are you listening to the radio?" I said, "Yes." He goes, "What is this going to do to my business?" I said, "If I could answer that question."
Yeah, really. Well, it depends on what business you're in.
Not only that, but you know, we've only had one, you know, plane fly into one building. Let's see what happens here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we actually saw the second one hit. What an awful time. And shame on you folks that did that. Shame on you. Dawn dishwashing detergent. Speaking of a problem that continues to gush 5,000 feet below the surface in the Gulf.
Yeah. What a great idea, by the way. I've heard about this.
Yes. The most effective advertising, the Ace Metrics list of most creative, effective TV spots breaking in the second quarter. This was actually on before the oil spill, but how poignant. And as far as BP, get your damn spots off television and get back to work.
Yeah.
Quit apologizing. You put a local boy. Well, I felt bad about it, so I'm going to help with the payout of all this money. Well, it's a lot more than money, BP. You've ruined a lot of people's lives. Shame on you. And you better get it fixed and quick. And Obama, Mr. our president, would you kick somebody's butt or do something beyond go to meetings? I mean, come on already. It's time.
I think he went behind the scenes and he said, did you hear me say butt? How did I do?
Yeah, right. Whatever.
You know, could you hear the cast call for the BP spot? Okay, I need some guy that has a Louisiana accent, strong accent. Yeah.
What a load of crap, BP. We have Amber Mack on the show on that, though, next week. And she's going to be great, too. Amber wrote a book. It's called Power Friending, all about social media. That's next week on the show, being sponsored by Advertising Age magazine. Visit online at edage.com. The Advertising Show, Ray Schillen from Brad Forsythe, is a Big Radio Midgets production. Talk to you next week.
Under pressure? Get creative concepts fast. Run a global pitch on openad.net and gain access to a global brain trust of nearly 11,000 advertising and marketing creators from 125 countries. Simply take 15 minutes to fill out our online brief form and we'll take care of the rest. From world-class agencies to the best independents to the brightest freelancers, openad.net global creatives can deliver creative concepts direct to your desktop in a matter of days. Why not save time, energy, and money by quickly sourcing concepts from the world's brightest creative minds? Visit openad.net and see how we're revolutionizing the way ideas are created and traded. It's simple, it's fast, and it's global. Openad.net, the smarter way to create your advertising from the freshest creative minds on the planet. Visit openad.net today to find out more.